now set, and please be seated.
Good afternoon. Ready to proceed?
Purchase price. My recollection is that that is correct with respect to the TV and the Xbox. But with respect to the DVDs, was there any specific testimony that these DVDs cost me X amount as opposed to, I thought the question was, what was the value of them? And she just said $10 each.
Well, let's put the flat screen and the Xbox aside, because if they were relatively new, you'd have to replace them by buying new ones. Does your whole argument then, I think her aggregate estimate was around $1,700, is that correct? Double check that. But if that's the case, then your argument really depends on her testimony on the DVDs, because if it's $750 or $800 and your goal is to get to say there's not enough evidence to support value more than $1,000, isn't that what it's going to turn out?
Sounds
like she paid $10 for it. Now, that doesn't, that's not the market value. It's fine. You can have DVDs removed, or they can be defective. You can buy DVDs for much less than $10.
Well, what we're trying to figure out, I think, is did the trial judge simply wing it based on hearing that recently purchased were two items, and it's fair to say their market value, because the purchase was so recent, was close to what she paid for them. But as to the DVDs, as Justice Holland has pointed out, which creates the balance of what between $700 and $1,000 necessary to tip the scales, is it fair to let an individual under Delaware law testify as to the value of their personal property, and in this specific case, DVDs at $10 each, when DVDs after purchase may or may not be worth what you paid for?
It's fair to let them testify as to what the statute requires market value. Now, the testimony would be exactly, well, I could buy substitute for used DVDs, I could buy used DVDs for $5 a piece, pretty much the same ones. That's different. But that, the trial judge sort of filled in the void that's in the ruling.
Well, what's our standard of review of the way in which he filled in the void? Is it abuse of discretion?
I would say it's almost in between abuse of discretion and error, Your Honor. Error in the sense that the trial judge said, I have no idea what they're worth. I have no idea what they're worth, which is part of that. However, I'm combined and satisfied that the value of those items, the TV, the Xbox, the CDs, and the jewelry exceed $1,000. So it's more or less speculation of that evidence or judicial notice or whatever, and it's inadequate according to the establishing the statutory definition of market value under 224.
Well, market value or replacement value, right?
Well, if the market value is unascertainable, and I don't think that the market value is unascertainable here, there's nothing to indicate that it's unascertainable.
Well, how would it... How would it be ascertained? The woman testified she paid around $10 each for them, according to your brief, and that would make their cumulative value around $750 to $800. And there's a reasonably fair inference that the other two items together were worth $700. So the trial judge is sitting there wondering whether or not there's another $300 somewhere within her estimate of the value of the DVDs, whether it's a market value or what it would cost her to replace them. Is it an abuse of discretion for him to say that she values them at $10 each and replacement DVDs are, in his mind, likely to cost more than $5 each and it only takes $5 to reach $1,000 mark? I mean, what do you say to the trial court about how you handle these kinds of situations from this case forward?
Well, the gap simply can't be filled in that manner. I have no idea what they're worth, but I'm going to accept that they're worth $1,000 and that deem that they're worth
$1,000. Well, put aside what he said as one of those flip things that I know, unfortunately, myself, trial judges tend to say from time to time. Forget about it. Of course, he doesn't know specifically what these individual DVDs maybe cost whatever they were. Does anyone have a general idea who just exists in 2004 America about what it costs to replace a DVD? A range of values? I mean, is that so far out of the human experience that we can't say, trial judge, she said she paid 10. If she can get them, do you think anybody can get a DVD for $5?
However, ancillary to that question is the assumption that the other property was valued at $700.
Yeah.
Her testimony is up to $1,729, so that's her testimony, and you can testify. But you're looking at the assumption, and I don't know whether people can take judicial notice of this or not, that there's a market for used DVDs. But we know you can buy them new. And her testimony is, I paid $10 new, and we know if she wanted to replace it with a new one, she'd probably have to pay $10. So that's her testimony. You're really getting it lower than $750, just to use round numbers, by saying you can take judicial notice that there is a market for used DVDs and you can replace them for less than $10.
There is a market for used DVDs, there is a market for used televisions, and there is a market for used Xbox players. And the market value is much less than original retail prices. Now, that may, unfortunately, it bothers the possessor of the property sometimes, but that's the market.
I'm concerned more from the perspective of how you go about doing this in trials, especially cases like this where we're not talking about so much property of such value that there really cannot be much dispute as to whether it meets the threshold. It's only going to be in these kind of cases where there's an issue of, well, gee, was this worth enough or wasn't it? The statute seems to say that there's got to be evidence of what the market value was at the time of the crime or the cost of replacing it. And then it says, and if there's nothing, then it's presumed to be $100, which arguably suggests that the statutory scheme was not designed to kind of automatically clear the hurdle, that, you know, that there really has to be evidence of either one or the other, market value at the time and place or replacement value. And here, the questions that were asked don't really focus on, what was the market value at the time and place of this crime. That wasn't the question that was asked. The answer that was given in each case suggests what the cost was, and perhaps that could be implied to be the replacement value. But now you're saying, well, you can't use replacement value unless there's no market value. And obviously we're not talking about bringing in expert appraisers on these cases. So what is your position as to how this needs to be handled in order to meet the threshold or fail to meet it?
Busy prosecutors, they still have to anticipate that it could be something that could be a problem. And you have to prepare your witness or prepare your case in such a way to prove this element. Now, granted, this is an unusual situation and it's an unusual case. And the state is arguing, they made a statement in their briefing to the effect that Trella's new math does not echo the pangs of an innocent man wrongfully convicted. No, I recognize that. I'm standing up here and arguing a technical argument about the value of property on behalf of a man who's a burglar, who's been convicted of burglar.
Is our standard of review in this case plain error? Do you agree with that?
No, I do not disagree with that. I think it's error.
But, I mean, how was it preserved at trial?
It was preserved because the trial court made the ruling.
Was there an objection to the ruling?
No, there was no objection to the ruling itself. The ruling was at the end of the case. This was a bench trial. And the trial court, of course, summarizes the evidence. In a sense, it was a verdict. So, I make it a practice not to object after the judge makes a ruling. Now, granted, there was serendipity here, that the judge, it was a non-bench trial, and the judge was required to make the factual finding. This would be a plain error case had there been a situation where it had been a jury trial, and the judge had, defense counsel had moved for judgment of acquittal on the receiving stolen property charge, but not the other offenses. And the judge only addressed the receiving stolen property and made a factual ruling as that. But the serendipity of it being a bench trial, we have a ruling. And how is the issue presented? Well, under the common law, that issue is a plain error where there issue is presented. I think the common law expression used to be appellate courts will not consider an issue that is not passed on below. So by serendipity, this was passed on. And you know, as it turns out, just to make it, unfortunately, I discovered the case last night. It was decided a few weeks ago. It's an unreported order of the court. It's Fallon versus Kane. But I cited the Warner that support the proposition that it's not plain error, a reported case about 2 years back.
What's the number of that case?
Warren versus Kane?
Yeah.
Fallon versus Kane is number 73, 2004, decided August 23rd. And that was a sufficiency of the evidence argument. And the court said because these defenses were not raised at trial, they cannot be considered on appeal unless review is required in the interest of justice. We have examined the record and concluded that Fallon has not shown that the trial court committed plain error in failing to address these defenses sua sponte. In effect, in this case, true serendipity, it was a bench trial. The trial court addressed issues sua sponte, therefore, contention is not plain error.
Well, your brief says the basis for the appeal is there was insufficient evidence to support the verdict. The finding that the property was worth the value the court found it to be, $1,000 or more. What I'm trying to get a handle on is, what do you tell the trial courts about how you handle these cases in the future when you have to make a determination about the value of property, when the statute maybe is inadequate to address the issue? You say the statute is adequate because it says you've got to have market price. There was no testimony about market price, either new or used. Surely there's someone that deals in the Delaware community and used DVDs who could have been called by the state to testify that I've examined 75 DVDs. I've determined that in my store they would sell for $10 each. Bingo. End of story. That didn't happen here. But does common sense say to us that there's sufficient evidence in the record, based upon one's understanding of today's environment, that a jury, just like the judge here, could fairly conclude that in total this evidence was that this of stolen, the evidence supported that the stolen property is worth $1,000 or more?
I'm not sure it's that impractical, this court, because the state doesn't, I don't really think, have to bring in appraisers and whatnot. It's not that unreasonably impractical. It's my recollection that market value is an exception to the hearsay rule. You know, so possessors of property, owners of property themselves can.
No, that there are a legion of cases that say that people can testify for whatever purpose in court to the value of their own personal property. And that's what happened here, isn't it?
Yes.
So why is that then insufficient evidence upon which the court can rely to find that the property is worth $1,000 or more?
But the trial court has found that I have no idea what the market value is here.
Well, it is true the trial court made that flip comment, I don't know what it's worth. And I read that to mean the trial judge says there's no formal testimony telling me that it's worth anything different than what the person who owned it says it's worth. Can it be read any other way?
Well, with all due respect to you, Justice, I wouldn't characterize that as a flip comment. I think it's an accurate comment. And the trial judge is dealing with the real world. And in this case, yes, you have a situation the state alludes to it. It's tough to argue a case on someone like this, a technical issue, on behalf of someone who's convicted of burglary. It's almost like the burden shifts. That you know, the state is convicted of the most serious offense, well, the burden shifts to the defendant in this group, you know, the less serious offense.
Well, that would only be if there were no evidence whatsoever as to the value of the property introduced. But we do have the owner testifying to the value of her property. Why isn't that good enough unless she were to testify that these DVDs are so emotionally important to me that they're worth $1,000 a piece to me because they were owned once by my older child who since died or something ridiculous like that?
I'd just like to reiterate it's not, you know, it's replacement value, it's not market value.
Okay. You want to save your last minute
yep.
for rebuttal?
Oh, excuse me. The case I just referred to, I gave two copies to Fallon versus King, I gave two copies to Mr. Johnson. We delivered 10 copies to the court.
May it please the court, Deputy Attorney General for start off, please, with the standard review. The state has certainly argued that the standard review in this case is plain error. And it's certainly not a case where there's a real question of did the defendant have a chance to address this issue with the court. The defendant had a very experienced trial counselor who explicitly made a judgment, a motion for judgment of acquittal on one of the four charges that found in those three, and stated in good conscience, I can't make that motion.
Well, did defense counsel argue to the judge sitting as the finder of fact that the record did not support a finding that the property stolen was worth $1,000 or more? Was it argued to the trial judge by defense counsel that the evidence did not support a finding that the stolen property was worth $1,000 or more?
I don't believe that defense counsel made that argument.
Well, let me put it slightly differently. Would we even be here today if the prosecutor had been more careful in the question that was asked with respect to value? In other words, if the prosecutor said, can you please tell me what, in your view, the market value of these DVDs was at the time of the theft? And the person said, well, since I paid about $10 for them, I think that the market value is $8. Or since I paid between $10 and $15 for them, I think the market value is $10. Or whatever the answer would have been, at that point, there would be evidence in the record of the market value of the property. But that wasn't the question that was asked. It was, can you put a value on it?
I would certainly agree with Your Honor that the witnesses to the state's witness in that case, the questions to the state's witness there, could have been more cleanly asked and answered, and certainly have made things a little bit easier for us at the present time. But I can't say that we wouldn't be here regardless of what was asked.
Isn't that the only basis for this appeal, is that the evidence was not evidence of market value at the time of the theft, but was rather evidence of, you know, cost or replacement value or something that under the statute you only get to if there's no market value?
Yes, Your Honor. And I guess if you want to look specifically at the property question here, I think even if we use the defendant's numbers for the DVDs, we're still well over the $1,000 value.
Okay, but I don't want this to sound the wrong way, but I'm not as concerned about what the numbers add up to as I am about what the evidence was and how it was presented to the court, because that's what's going to happen again and again. Anytime you've got a case where it's close to $1,000, there's going to be an issue of proving the prerequisite for it being a felony. So we talked with your opponent about whether somebody could come in and give the testimony that would be necessary versus the owner, who's entitled as a matter of law to opine and to the value of her property. And what I'm trying to find out is, how do we make sure we don't have this problem again in terms of the court saying, well, I don't really know what the value is. And if, you know, one way of looking at is that it was a flip comment or, you know, a casual kind of offhand thing that wasn't really significant. Another way of looking at it is the court was indirectly commenting on the fact that the questions that were asked did not elicit the answers that were needed in order to determine value under the statute.
Yes, Your Honor, I'm following much.
Okay.
As far as how to basically fix this in the future so that we're not this kind of scenario, because obviously felony theft is a common charge and it's going to come up again. First of all, the case law certainly does say that property owners have the right to testify to the value of their own property. And it's something like especially in the instance where we're talking about something that's just so widely available to members of the public, like a DVD. Her testimony is not out of line with, to say $10. That's not so out of line that common sense says, oh, well, we're going to have you to go out there and see if you tried to buy them today in a DVD store, what would you be able to find each of these specific videos for. I would submit to the court that's asking a whole lot of the person who's been victimized to be able to justify, well, now I've been burgled, I have to go out and now be able to stand up in court and say, today is what I can buy them for. But at the time she didn't do that, that's not the relevant time frame. We have to look at the time of the crime. And to start to expect victims to, at the moment they're returning to their house, finding the police there, having their whole lives turned upside down, to then say, okay, in order to be able to have this charge proven in court, I better start going out right now and finding out what the replacement cost is.
I think what Justice Berger is suggesting is who the prosecutor is going to present the case, and the prosecutor knows they have to show market value or perhaps replacement value. And in preparing the witness, you say to the owner, if that's the testimony you're going to use, you have a dialogue with them and you decide whether you can use the owner as the witness to establish market value. And if the owner said, well, I bought it for $800 and in my opinion, the market value is $600, that's all you need to have credible evidence. It's admissible because it's the owner's opinion, and then it's subject to cross-examination or some other challenge. But that doesn't appear to be the way this case developed.
I'm not going to suggest, Your Honor, that one or two more questions would have made this probably go away in the context of this case.
And that's probably what led the trial court to conclude, I don't know what the value is, but it looks to me like it's over 1,000, don't you think?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's a very reasonable evaluation of what trial court said.
So the question becomes for us, when you have a statement on the record by the trier of fact that says, I don't know what the value is, has the person's guilt been established beyond a reasonable doubt that the value was in excess of $1,000?
I don't want to beat this part to death, but I just want to make sure I present it enough to the court so that you are convinced, at least in this specific case, that there was more than $1,000 in value to the property. And if you don't want me to speak on that, then I certainly won't. I'll move on to the
Well, I think we all share the same view that Justice Berger's expressed, that the issue in the case isn't so much whether these DVDs were worth $10 or $8 or $12, either on the day they were stolen or the day that the owner testified. But how should we write an opinion that tells trial judges, given and prosecutors and defense counsel, given the statute, this is the way in which evidence as to the value of property should be presented in a case of this kind and how it should be then evaluated?
Essentially, Your Honor, that to ask more than just what do you pay. The what do you pay question followed up by do you have any reason to believe that if you were to go out and try to buy those today that the market's now been flooded, something like that, if we're talking about this, the DVD example, that essentially While not trying to impose, bringing in an appraiser kind of thing, giving the person, the victim, the opportunity to say, yes, I have no reason to believe that if I went out and tried to purchase these same things today, that there's going to have been a substantial drop in the value.
Well, just for the court's edification, when it wouldn't be normal in a case like this for the prosecutor, knowing the victim is going to be testifying, to say, you know, you lost your TV, your Xbox, and a bunch of these DVDs, and you're going to have to testify as to market value. Would you go out and see where you can get them, see what they cost, either used or new, and then when we get ready for trial, you can tell me what you found out? I would think that would be normal.
I would hope that would be normal, Your Honor. I cannot speak for the prosecutor in the specific case. I'm just going to say what communications he had with the victims. I'm not sure if I could really give you the specific answer as to how to write an opinion that would say this is the very next question that you need to ask.
Well, putting the value aside, let's go back to my question. When the judge says on the record, I really don't know the value, but I conclude they're worth more than $1,000 or something like that, can we say that the person's guilt has been established beyond a reasonable doubt?
Yes, Your Honor, you certainly can. The one case that Mr. Crowley cites on behalf of that the victim's testimony here is not going to be sufficient credible evidence in the Virginia case, in which there was a fire, the victim didn't even know how many coats had been stolen, and specifically testified, I'm just guessing this is their language. In this case, we have substantially tighter testimony than I don't know how many numbers. I mean, it is between 75 and 80 CDs. I will certainly concede that there's some deviation there. But there was not this enormous range given as this, the Virginia case that was referenced to that testimony not being good enough. But looking at this court's jurisprudence in Davis, the testimony provided by the victim really was sufficient for this court to say, yes, there is certain credible evidence from which the finder of fact was able to determine beyond a reasonable doubt that there was more than $1,000 of property stolen. And under Jackson v. Virginia, that the prosecution is entitled to have that presumption in its favor. If the court has no further questions, then
thank you. I just have one question. Do you recall, since it's in neither of the appendices, whether or not the argument was made to the court that there was insufficient evidence of the value of the property in summation? Was it just assumed that the trial judge had to make that finding as it was an element of the offense?
A couple of the latter. My recollection is that the closing arguments weren't transcribed.
Yeah, there's just a notation that the summations followed. I just wondered if you knew whether the argument was made. Okay. Anybody else? Thank you very much. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.
Please rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All manner of persons having anything before the Supreme Court of the State of Delaware may now depart and give their attendance to the following court. The court is now adjourned. God save the state and the honor of the court.